You are listening to Skip Intro. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me today, Bahir Yusof, Ian McNally, and we're talking about this guy. With the 80th anniversary of Batman's first appearance in Detective Comics number 27 this weekend, we thought it would be good to celebrate the Dark Knight's birthday with a special look at his history on screen, as well as some of our favourite moments, some of our favourite character moments, I guess, and also to look at what might be in store for the future, because it's been a bit of a rocky road recently. So, okay, are you guys Batman fans?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that was quick. Yeah. All right, so why? Why? Tell me why.
Do you want to do this?
It's a cool suit, man. I dig the car. Chicks dig the car,
yeah. I mean, I think, as probably as Ian as well, I came to Batman from the Michael Keaton movies and then went back to read the comics. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's just the idea he's essentially just a rich, normal guy that's taking out his anger at the murder of his parents with everybody.
Yeah, in varying degrees. I mean, comics are great as this fertile ground for coming up with ideas and trying them out,
yeah,
as opposed to like a TV show. You try it once, you're canceled if it's awful. Mm. Like, you can have these different versions where he can be just like trying out his anger, but also sometimes he can just actually be just a defender for justice.
Yeah, I mean, I prefer the anger.
Yeah,
angle more.
You're a very angry guy.
I am.
But it's that core idea of he is just a guy who has trained himself to be able to do this kind of thing. And there's different aspects of it we'll get to as well later. But for me, I came to it, the 89 kind of shot my love of Batman into the stratosphere, but we got plenty of repeats in Ireland of the 1966 Adam West and Burt Ward TV show.
I saw that after the Keaton one.
Wow, that must have been a trip.
Oh, that was great. Because my dad would say, oh, no, you have to watch this Batman.
Yeah, kids today don't know what Batman is.
You kids don't know who Batman is. Yeah, and the red phone and the button and the bat poles.
You know, I think this whole ordinary Bruce Wayne thing really works if you came to it via Michael Keaton.
Mm.
Because Michael Keaton has that everyman quality to his face. Yes. I mean, he's wonderful, but he has that.
Yeah, thank God the internet wasn't around then, or people would have lost their minds at Mr. Mom being Batman.
Mm,
oh,
that's there is,
true.
Yeah, because I think I came to Batman via the Michael Keaton, Tim Burton movies, but then I stopped there. And then, you know, so it's just my exposure to Batman has been very limited to just the movies, pretty much the movies. I haven't even watched the animations. I haven't watched the television shows. And I've read maybe two comics, and that's it, tops. Mm. Yeah.
So you've never seen how absurd the 1966 show is?
I mean, I've seen clips of it on the internet. I get that
that's
it's a thing.
That's about as good as they're for.
Yeah.
To be honest. Let's be perfectly honest. That's what they're good for.
There is a joy in them. I mean,
joyous.
And they weren't actually aimed at kids. They were aimed at just like swinging 60s hipsters. And like everything Julie Newmar does in that show is Catwoman, you know, generations of confused feelings for boys all over the world. The rest of the cast on that show, they're amazing. And just the way they, even looking at it now, all the Dutch angles and the stylistic shots, yes, it's for kids. Yes, it's repeat. It's got these kind of like almost like the fast show or comedy sketch shows of these in jokes that build on each other till they actually get funny.
No, but I think as well, the thing to keep in mind is in some ways, that 1966 Batman series essentially birthed a lot of the Batman lore, right?
Yeah.
What Catwoman looks like, what the Joker looks like, what, you know, the Penguin looks like, and they were just based on these great character actors from the 60s that, you know, became iconic, who then had the comic books and the subsequent versions of those characters drawn up based off them. So in some ways, as much as they were a joke, they essentially birthed, you know, the best parts of what we now feel is Batman.
Why do you think it is that we've been revisiting this particular well so many times? You know, is it just because of the ongoing popularity, or is there something else, you know, to the character of Batman or to the characters that populate Gotham, right? That make it such a rich well to draw from? Because we do see the same things happening with other characters. I mean, Spider-Man, for example, is just, we've been back there so many times.
Yeah.
But with Batman, I mean, it's reboot and then it's, you know, maybe 5 years and then, it's another reboot and it's another trilogy.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, I'm not sure what that is.
For me, I think the Bruce Wayne character is what's most important. Right? There's a certain level of wish fulfillment as well about being this good-looking, rich guy.
If I just had the time,
if I just had the time, fight and the crime money and
the cave.
Yeah,
yeah. So, but in for me as a storytelling vehicle, I think the idea is he's not Superman. He's not. He hasn't been bestowed with a magic ring. He's not from the Amazonian. He's just like you and me, who just happens to be rich and has essentially put his own body and mind to defeating evil.
And it's the thing of losing your parents at a young age, like that, and what that would do to you. Yeah. And you know, it's very easy to empathize with that. Another thing is that his rogues gallery, when you compare an awful lot of other heroes, like most shows talk about Superman, talk about like it's very hard to come up with an enemy that can fight him that's strong enough, but you're not using your imagination enough. Batman's villains tie in incredibly well with his psyche and what's going on. Like the Joker doesn't seem like it should work, but like that idea of like chaos to his order. Yeah. Two-Face is like the split personality thing. Penguin is like, if he had become an arms dealer, if he'd embrace crime with his money instead
of
actually
a different animal.
Yeah.
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 If a penguin had crashed through his window in the middle of the night while he was brooding,
knows?
I should become a penguin.
And then there's the Riddler.
Yeah.
Who's just bonkers.
Yeah.
And I think that's, to me, that's part of the reason I go back to Batman. And even like we were talking earlier about the comics, there's the Batman sort of comic titles are really confusing in the sense that
there's Detective Comics, there's
Detective
Batman
Comics,
Family,
Batman, and then Batman Inc., and then Batman, you know, so then on and on and on. But some of the comic lines are more fantastical. Some of the comic lines are the ones you will see people like Clayface, whereas others will be more on the detective side. He's trying to stop a child kidnapper. Mm. He's trying to stop the Joker, who's probably like at the edge of fantastical villains without crossing into, well, he fell into a vat of things and then making him clay based.
Well, it was makeup. It's film thing, you know.
Yeah,
that's how makeup works.
I apologize. Yeah.
A big thing as well, if you haven't seen the animated shows, I think there's a box set of the animated series out now. Mm. That really cements that idea of like the characters feel that they all fit together in that. I mean, the Flash TV show has a guy called King Shark, who's like basically a giant shark with a human body, right?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't quite fit in with the villain, the rest of the villains, or in Spider-Man, you know, it starts to peter off after a while, after you get past Doc Ock and a few other thematically, you know, matching villains. Whereas they were able to do, you know, three seasons, I think it was, of this show, and all the characters, like the Clayface fits that world.
Mm-mm.
Poison Ivy fits that world. And they also, you know, when I hear Batman's voice, if I'm reading a comic, it's Kevin Conroy's voice.
Yeah.
He is like almost like the canonical Batman.
And I think that's partly the problem, right? Because post Michael Keaton, Val Kilmer, and George Clooney,
mm-hmm.
Kevin Conroy became the voice of Batman. So I think that's what Bale was trying to do with his deep voice and trying to do that thing.
Because Kevin Conroy did a very good switch between his Bruce Wayne and his Batman without growling. Like he was able to make, you just could hear it in the voice that one was just slightly softer and the other was like, I am the knight.
Well, actually, that leads me to a conversation that I want to pursue, which we will do right after this, because, you know, we all came to, our base is the same. You know, everybody came to it via Michael Keaton. And so I'm curious for the people who are coming to it via Christian Bale, where that lands you in this, you know, whole big spectrum of Batman. And we'll get to that right after this on Skip Intro, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters. BFM 89.9.
You are listening to Skip Intro with Lynn, Ian, and Bahe. It is Batman's 80th birthday very, very soon. That one just doesn't know how to quit. So we've been talking about Batman in all his incarnations, his various incarnations. And yeah, so we're all children of Michael Keaton's Bruce Wayne, really. What then do you make of the fact that with Christopher Nolan and Christian Bale's version of The Dark Knight, which is much more gritty, less mm-hmm. campy, and very, I am, where is he? You know, all that going on. Where, you know, for the people who are encountering this Batman first, how do you think revisiting all those previous Batmans would look? Because it's so strange.
They would have really missed out on the bat nipples.
Yes, the bat nipples.
We all wanted to miss out on the bat nipples.
But
was it Val Kilmer or George Clooney first had them? I think it was Val.
Yeah. So and I think, you know, it's burned in our psyches. It's fine. But
I like the way you've skipped over those completely to get to the Netflix one, to get to the Nolan movies.
Actually, when you mentioned Val Kilmer and George Clooney, I had an internal head hang. I was like, why do we have to go there? Why? Why do we even have to?
I didn't think Val Kilmer was that bad. The Gotham City itself was weird.
Yeah.
He wasn't so bad. I don't know what Nicole Kidman was doing. The follow up was a complete car crash.
But I mean, the Val Kilmer one, I mean, mean, the only good thing I can say about the Val Kilmer Batman is it's got one of the best soundtracks ever.
It's not enough.
It's not. You're right.
Kiss Me, Kill Me, Kill Me doesn't... Is that that's that one?
Thrill
right?
Me, Kiss Me, Kill Me, yeah. Or something. Yeah,
Kiss by a Rose.
It's a great soundtrack, but... That's all I'll say about that. Let's just move along.
But you couldn't have those Nolan movies without those previous movies. Like, they had to reboot it. I mean, it is weird how often, the number of times I've watched The Dark Knight, and I've probably only seen Batman Begins maybe three times, because it sets up things so well, and The Dark Knight is such like the perfect sequel. It's so good that Nolan couldn't even top it when he did The Dark Knight Rises. Like, it didn't. I just felt like you couldn't help but feel disappointed.
It was still one of those things. Wasn't it one of those Godfather type things where the studio wanted a third movie but the filmmaker didn't?
Might have been.
I thought I read that somewhere. Yeah, yeah. I thought I read that somewhere that the studio wanted him to make the third Batman when Nolan essentially felt that he had finished it off with what happened with the Joker.
Because I think the Dark Knight is the reason why I do this. Like, it was just, there was so much depth in there. You can get an awful lot of just film school by watching all the choices they made, the flipping to IMAX for different versions.
Yeah.
Heath Ledger's performance. It's the Bat and who he faces against. Yeah. And that was unlike anything that had come before. And I remember they had a viral thing to like release a video of his face. You had to click on a square to release it. And it was just like, what is this?
There was a whole like online guerrilla marketing campaign and offline guerrilla marketing campaign as well. It's crazy.
But with that, right, do you think that we've lost any possibility of returning to the camp? Because don't get me wrong, the Dark Knight, Christopher Nolan thing, amazing, right? Yeah. Like, we don't really have to argue about that. But with the slamming of a head into a pencil on a table, have we moved completely away from Jack Nicholson? You know, are we able to return to that? Or, you know, from now on, are we locked into this hellscape of Gotham?
I think that's an interesting... You're right, in the sense that the Nolan movies has essentially screwed over Warner Brothers for all their comic movies.
Well, I think they screwed themselves over, because at the same time that The Dark Knight came out, they were also broadcasting a show called Batman Brave and the Bold, and it was Diedrich Bader. I don't know if you know Diedrich Bader. He's in Veep. He's a very great voice, and it was a very much, even they must have seen like early cuts or something for it being the same year, because it's very much a reaction to that. He looks like the animated Bruce Wayne from the beginning, or Batman from the beginning of the 1966 credit show. Like, he's wearing gray tights. It's not a black
gray
leather
and blue,
suit.
Yeah.
It's gray and blue. The opening of the show is always something completely unrelated to the rest of it. It's always a team up. I think if you watch it here, it might be your favorite Aquaman show ever.
Oh yeah,
because it's the orange jumper.
The orange and green outfit.
He's a blonde guy with short hair, and he's also a complete blowhard who's always narrating his own adventures as he goes along.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Batman is just like, "What are you doing?" all the time to him. He refers to his hands as the fists of justice. It's this incredibly cheesy, incredibly earnest way of doing things, and it came at the same time.
Yeah,
and I think people have now got to the point with movies that they have with the comics years ago, where it's like you read them and then you watch them, you throw them away, and people don't mind getting a new version. Like, people don't mind now having Tom Holland and Miles Morales as the same as both the Spider-Man. It's not like, who's this guy? You know, people didn't even think about that.
Yeah, and I think in some ways they have to look at themselves in the mirror with regards to the Batman character. The Batman versus Superman. We've
arrived at Ben Affleck. Great.
Yeah, we've arrived at the great one. So and even when he was announced as the he was going to be the writer, director, and the lead in his own,
it should have been a great fit.
It should have been, but it just wasn't. Yeah. I think they were so stuck on this idea of Batman must be dark and gritty because Chris Nolan proved that dark and gritty Batman is what works. And oh, by the way, because Superman is now in this universe, he also has to be dark and gritty. Mm. And by the way, Metropolis and Gotham is just like
across the river.
Yeah.
Nobody's ever seen a primary color. Yeah.
Yeah. So, and that becomes the problem. They've sort of fallen into that idea that, well, if Chris Nolan could do it, then this should be our version of the universe. And I think that's the problem.
It does show how it's mirrored the comics, though. After The Dark Knight Returns came out, which is dark, gritty, fascistic, and, you know, overly violent Batman came out, instead of the comics community deciding, like, hey, let's try different versions of different things, you know? Maybe we can make Superman be a disco dancer. I don't know. I'm not a comic writer. But instead, they just went like, ugh, everything's gritty.
Yeah.
And I feel as if Batman in particular is a good fit for that, though, because of the whole cave, everything, you know, I live in the darkness thing, you know, that thing he's got going on. And so I just worry sometimes that we're losing the inherent funniness of the fact that you're looking at a guy dressed as a bat. Right? I mean, we can't forget that.
Yeah.
And not only is he dressed as a bat, but he's so devoted to it that his gear is all bat-shaped. Yeah. I mean, there's something inherently kind of silly about it. And I think to lose it is to lose part of what makes the character great.
And I think...
So what you want is basically the next Batman movie is Jack Black and it's a comedy.
I would watch that. I mean, am I saying that is what I want? No. If it comes out, would I watch it? Yeah. Yes.
But I think you're right in the same way that a lot of the comics doesn't have that overly depressed look and feel. Yeah. The comics tend to be quite funny.
He's solving a problem, and that's something I would like to see. I mean, we have this Joker movie with Joaquin Phoenix in it coming out. Mm. The hopeful element of it, there's another cartoon that came out after the animated series, which did move things forward, called Batman Beyond. Or Batman of the Future, as it's referred to in Europe. And the idea of that is, like, Batman's old. He can't do this stuff. Like, he's super old.
Like,
most every villain has been put away or is dead or whatever. And this new kid takes up the mantle. And we're bringing up, you know, into the Spider-Verse a lot, because that showed you multiple ways of having Spider-Man. Warner Brothers seem to be looking at this as their way to do that, in that they're going to do, that they're looking at doing a new animated Batman Beyond picture, and doing that where they can fracture into these different things.
Right.
Not do the multiverse like they did in Spider-Verse, but start getting people into the habit. And the DC's animated pipeline, like, they have been just spewing. Like, I couldn't keep up with the amount of content they spread out. They do adaptations of comics, they do original things. There was a Batman Ninja movie that came out that's essentially all the bad guys and good guys get transported to Edo, Japan.
Yeah.
And have to make do there, and it's bizarre, and the ending of it goes full on anime, and that got a lot of press at the time. I think it's kind of dropped off at the end, because that ending is really weird. But there are those spaces, I think, still. It's going to take a while for them to get back into the huge part of the public consciousness.
So what do we hope for next then? I mean, considering that right now, at least in movie land, it's kind of gone quiet, hasn't it?
There's
because
no
Ben
Batman.
Affleck's no longer going to be Batman.
Matt Reeves is still working on his Batman. He's involved with Planet of the Apes, right?
Yes.
So he's working on The Batman, because obviously that's not a name that's, you know, that's memorable. There's not been much about that movie. I think they've said they're going to be focusing on the Penguin. They're going to also be doing more of a back to basics thing. What I would always love to do, and I would love to see, is a back to some of the basics from the comics, which is it's the Detective Comics. I want to see the Dark Knight Detective. There's this idea of, like, the most investigative thing he does in the Dark Knight is whatever the hell he was doing with that bullet reconstruction thing that somehow leads him to this apartment. I don't know, no one understands how that made any sense whatsoever. It could have just been like, we got a tip off. Would have been easier than explaining that sequence. Chris Nolan just wanted to fire off a minigun, I guess.
Yeah.
But I want to see him, like, he's supposed to be putting together, the normal criminals are nothing to him. That should be easy, you know, go beat them up, no problem. But following the thread through to, like, a Joker or a Riddler or something like that, and actually not knowing who the villain is until the very end, and he's the smart one who figures it out. He's got to be two steps ahead of the audience, and not in a lazy way. That's why it's hard to write this stuff. It's hard to make a mystery that the audience feels like they feel satisfied when it's resolved, but don't feel cheated because it was just written from the back forward.
But it feels like what you're saying is you want to see an Arkham. What's the second Arkham game? Batman Arkham game?
Arkham City.
No,
I don't really mind about the city. It was just, even if there's no supervillains,
if it's just him detecting,
like, actually going out, finding things out, you know?
Which is what Arkham City was, right? He has to pick up clues, he has to put these together, he has to find out where they go and all that.
But I think it's also in a city that's been overrun by the bad guys.
That's not the point I'm talking about, it's the detectiving, you know? But yeah, you're right, completely. I think that aspect of Batman has been downplayed a lot in all of the films.
Tell us what your favorite Batman moments have been, and what your hopes for the future are. Are you keen on Armie Hammer? Will anybody ever be better than Michael Keaton? Let us know on Skip Intro MY. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, as well as Instagram. And also, if you missed any part of this podcast or you just can't get enough, we are on bfm.my/skipintro. You can get all the podcasts there as well. Thank you very much for listening. BFM 89.9.